One of the challenges my team runs into quite a bit is describing all the ways which the cloud can be implemented. You see, the cloud has this rather agile kind of building block nature to it, which means that you can use it to create just about anything. And that can make it difficult to describe all the use cases in kind of a categorical sense, if you will. I kind of think of it like trying to take a Lego set and telling someone that, sure, you can use this Lego set to build, I don't know, this airplane or that castle, or you can use it to build something entirely different. And if you start diving into all the potential models, all the blueprints, all the various instruction manuals, it can get really daunting. You have to think about where would you start, how to prioritize, and how to explain or justify the project to your fellow colleagues or supervisors, which is why I love the story we're bringing to you today. The Wyoming Office of State Lands and Investments, or Wyoming OSLI, is a revenue-generating agency that manages funds coming in from land lease or land use activity. Think of things like windmill farms or coal mining or stuff like that. As you might imagine, the maintenance and the reporting and whatnot surrounding one use case, windmill farming versus another one, coal mining, you know, that'll vary greatly, resulting in a number of different work streams. So to manage all of this, Wyoming OSLI built a series of applications that they call SLAMS, which stands for Surface Land Asset Management System. Think of it like an application library that digitized the paper-based processes that manage the workflows around all of these different land parcels and then combined them into a single comprehensive platform. I think it's a perfect look at the building blocks that often serve as a foundation for those more elaborate platforms, those more elaborate airplanes or castles, if you will.
Showing it to other members of the staff, and the word that comes out of their mouth is, wow, I've never seen that before. I've never been able to see this type of data or that particular data set.
You can check out a ton of information on how they did it. Visit sfdc.co/OSLI. Again, that is sfdc.co/OSLI for an overview of SLAMS, a how-to guide that walks through their design and deployment process in a step-by-step manner, and a lot more information. Today's conversation, however, will look at the five ways which Wyoming OSLI is realizing the ROI on this integrated application library. These are things that others might be able to use as talking points when they're looking to justify a similar approach or stand up a similar project. And fair warning, this episode is a little longer than my usual ones, but that's because my guests had too many valuable sound bites to squeeze into my normal 20-minute-ish goal. But stick with it to the end. It's worth it.
Our Digital Nation is brought to you by the FedRAMP-approved Salesforce Government Cloud. Give leadership, management, and employees the mobile, self-service, analytical tools they need to connect data, process, and people. Create a digital platform that puts the customer at the heart of the mission.
SLAMS is something we're extremely proud of.
That's Jason Crowder, Assistant Director for Wyoming Office of State Lands and Investments, and one of the trailblazers behind SLAMS.
It really kind of embodies everything that we need to do here as an agency. It complies with the mission that we are required to adhere to and provide services to the citizens of the state of Wyoming. It brings all of our tasks, all of our duties under one umbrella. It puts all of the data in one place. It makes all that data manipulatable by all the program managers that work for us. They do it in one place. They all see the same thing at the same time. And they can do that here in our headquarter office in Cheyenne, Wyoming. They can do that in our scattered field offices throughout the state. They can also do that in their pickups when they're doing field inspections or doing work out in the Great West. So it really embodies everything that we need to do here. Our forefathers who put this together in 1890 and before had a very good vision about how to fund institutions, especially the public school system in the state. And it was, allow the land to do the work for you. Don't tax the people, but allow the land to do the work. Allow business to do the work for you. For us to be able to further that forethought, that mission, and say, we're going to keep life in Wyoming like it's been known for, low taxes, business friendly, all of these things. I find that very heartening. And when you do that for actual school kids, the K-12 school system, there's not a better mission that I can think you can push forward. So me especially, and I think Ben feels the same way, we're not typical state employees. We're not here regulating a certain activity. We're here promoting and supporting a way of life, and we're promoting and supporting the next generation that comes up. And that's very fulfilling to me.
Absolutely.
And that's Ben Bump, also an assistant director for Wyoming Office of State Lands and Investments and the other trailblazer behind SLAMS.
And I mean, it all comes back to those couple key things in our mission, you know, maximizing and optimizing, you know, revenue generation and looking after this trust asset that we've been given as a state and as citizens and having the charge to look after it in the long term. And our system allows us to do both of those things better. Like Jason talked about with increasing revenue and finding those things, but also tracking our lands and asking the questions maybe that weren't asked before, because we do have a handle on what's going on every piece of land. And so, you know, maximize and optimize, that's what SLAMS does for us. And both as an employee of this agency doing my job better, more efficiently, more effectively, but also as a taxpayer of the state of Wyoming, I love it.
Wyoming OSLI's mission is a mission of trust, literally. You see, when the state was formed back in 1890, it was issued its land by way of a grant from the federal government. This grant said that the 7.3 million acres of land would be held in a trust that's dedicated to supporting Wyoming's public schools and institutions. This means that revenue generated from land use gets plugged right back into the state. Jason put that into context for me. He said in prep for this interview, "We are effectively managing natural resources and funds for current and future generations." And I thought that statement was a great lead-in to our first area of ROI, overall effectiveness.
Uses on state trust lands, state lands that we manage within the state of Wyoming, are changing. And that's because the world is changing. We were kind of siloed into three distinct uses on those lands: grazing, cows and sheep and other things, oil and gas production, and coal mining. And that's what we did, and we did it very well, and we made good revenue from that. But the world is changing. The environment is changing. I think if you watch the news or have watched the news over the last few years, markets, especially energy markets, were tanking. Oil and gas dropped from $120 a barrel down to $20. We as a state saw really no coal mining for a couple of years. So we expected to have our revenues decline right in step with those markets declining. Obviously, we're very much at the whim of their ebbs and flows.
Our mission got more complex on us over time. And in order to work as efficiently as possible and as effectively as possible in the face of that changing complexity and with decreased resources, we needed a system, a data platform that could reflect that. If we were going to work better and more efficiently, we needed our data and our interface and our platform to work in that more complex environment.
And that's about the same time where we actually started utilizing this SLAM system. We were enhancing our communication internally. So program managers were talking to each other about the uses they wanted to deploy on certain pieces of land, and they were doing that in a much more effective manner. We actually saw an 80% increase in our revenue. We went from $11 million to $60 million, $60 million going through the system. And that's during that time of very poor market conditions. So you can't really point to anything, but we deployed the system, we enhanced our communication, and we actually got activity on the ground.
The second area we discussed, data-driven decisions. ROI is about more than just the numbers. It's also about the capabilities and the advancements that result from a smart venture. Ventures that give you the kind of insights you need to quantify things that are usually unmeasurable. You see, with more data points about when and where a given project was successful, comes better insights about the why. Whether you're talking about a parcel of land and the performance against it, like we are today, or any other project, like a new service. The more information you have about it, the better you can paint that complete picture. It's Stats 101. By taking its paper-based processes digital, deploying them in the applications that we've been discussing, Wyoming OSLI unlocked more information, more insights about what made its land most productive, most successful. And this helped both teams internally as well as their customer base act upon information that was more reliable, more concrete, and see better results.
We were providing better information to our customers, to the industry actually using our parcels. So they were making better and more efficient business decisions, which meant use was actually happening on our lands, where in other places it had stopped. But when you have one program manager looking at one data set, then they're not going to give that customer all the information he needs to make a good business decision. And so SLAMS was integral in combining all of that into one so that we can provide good information to that customer and they can make good business decisions. All of our program managers can see the effects that those uses may have, compatible with each other or not, and we can make good decisions for the use of our lands to further comply with our mission. It also allows users of our lands, those industry folks that are coming to us wanting to use those lands, they get good, accurate, real data and can make business decisions based on the data that we can provide. And they can decide if they want a wind farm or a natural gas firing plant in the same place where a coal mine is or where an oil and gas well is. So SLAMS is all of that put into one thing. It's the single source of record. There's a lot of areas that I'm excited about. Just seeing this transformation, I mean, being part of the group that worked in paper, and now we are at this point, I'm so excited about this whole process that we've actually done it. We actually pushed this ball across the finish line. It can be done, and we did it for a very cheap cost. We've got other agencies in this state who spend a lot more money than we have, and they don't have a whole lot to show for it. And we have this amazing system. It's very fulfilling to me to open it up and actually see the data on the screen, and I can manipulate that any way I want to, and I can report on that any way I want to. Where before, my desk was just covered with papers, and I was hand-scratching certain information to be able to deliver a report to whoever I needed to deliver it to. The more data you can have available, the more transparent you are, the easier and more efficient your work can be. The more you get out there, the easier your work is. And I think we're recognizing that not only because we're opening our data internally, but we're opening it externally. So our conversations with customers are getting better and more efficient, and we're putting better uses on the ground, which is generating more revenue. And it's all because we've just taken this data out of the paper, put it in this electronic format that we've opened up internally and externally, and we've taken that data out of the computers and put it in the hands of the people, and we've seen great benefits from that.
We had our field inspectors in the last year bring in a huge number more of inspections, and I fully attribute that directly to our inspections module in SLAMS. We needed to have that data available and trustworthy and a single source.
Number three, tracking to the budget. Something that is top of mind for the lean and mean budgets that are so inherent to the public sector.
Before you knew it, you guys were really leading a digital transformation effort. Can you talk to me a little bit about that journey and maybe even that realization of exactly how big and bold of a project you guys were driving?
You know, there had been an initiative statewide to sort of start pulling these state government agencies here in Wyoming into the 21st century. We were kind of in this backseat as far as the availability of funds when this kind of came about. So that started us off on the foot of, okay, we're going to need to try and do this with very limited funds and resources and know-how. And so from day one, that was the attitude that we had to take with this project. We decided that it had to be a priority for us. We decided it had to be something that we wouldn't let fail. It needed to be shepherded through the process because it wasn't going to be easy and it wasn't going to be given to us. We started off by saying, you know, with no consideration to development, with no consideration to the technical side, what do we need? What do we want? And then we really focused on trying to be able to express that to our partners, our contractors, and get them on board. I think we kind of intuitively knew that early on that that was going to be a super key to success, was to be able to translate that vision to our partners, to our contractors, and then see where that road would take us and be willing to sort of go down that road on the development side, kind of not knowing the technical ends that you were going for. And I think that from the beginning, you know, it may, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but it ultimately to me seems a benefit that we did have a shoestring budget and that we didn't have necessarily in-house IT expertise, because we were able to keep focus without those things kind of cluttering up. I think that we've seen, you know, things happen in government where sometimes it's not the best thing to, you know, throw millions of dollars at something and then just say, you know, go create a system. Maybe it's better sometimes to be lean and mean, and you really have to prioritize what you need. And maybe you can't even get all of your needs, but you start with the first couple and go from there. And that's how we've approached it.
And you mentioned in there that big blue sky exercise, and that is one of my favorite parts about this story.
Yeah, it was a fun effort. When we started that effort, we were completely dependent on paper. And we had a few cell phones and we had a few Excel spreadsheets, but that was the extent of our digital footprint. And so we didn't know what we needed or how to move forward. And the idea was, well, let's just get in a room and decide, what can we do? If you could have anything, this system was able to give you everything and anything you've ever wanted, let's write that down. So we spent a month putting all of that up on a whiteboard. We videoed some of the discussions. We took pictures of everything that was written.
Yeah. And you guys have exceeded that list since then. That's at least the rumor I heard from our team here internally.
Yeah, absolutely. We hit all of those marks pretty quickly and then immediately jumped into, you know, our enhancement list. And over the course of the last year and a half or so, we've been completing with our partner, with our contractor. We've been completing a good handful of new applications that have been deployed already or that will continue to be deployed. And we're already planning the next iteration.
Number four, culture. Jason and Ben led by example on this one. They created a can-do environment by tackling a new area of expertise. Have a listen.
You guys were rather forthcoming with the fact that you are not IT experts, yet here you are on my podcast.
Yeah, and I don't know that we're still IT experts. We know how we want this system to work, and we know that it has to function in a certain way to be a benefit to our system. And so we've had extreme dedication to that. There's been no option for failure. I believe we've grown up watching other systems be developed and then be used for a couple of years and go away or be replaced. And it's because they may have had several cooks in the kitchen and not a clear direction. I don't think you have to be an IT expert to do this. We are leveraging folks who are IT experts. We've brought on very good, what I like to call strategic partners, contractors that share our vision and know where we're headed, and we rely on them to bring that IT expertise. We're bringing the business expertise. They have to bring the IT and be aligned with the direction that we're headed. So I don't know that we're IT experts yet, but we definitely know what the system needs to do. We're at this leading edge of digital transformation, not because we set out to do it, but because we had the dedication and saw the need within our agency to do that.
Awesome. As you guys reflect on your experience, what opportunities do you think a project like this, one that takes that very modern digital approach to how technology is being used in the mission, what do you think that represents for government as a whole?
I think that for me, it is a realization that I think it kind of, in my mind, dispels the myth that, you know, in order to be on the cutting edge or get closer to the cutting edge anyway, and have a cloud-based system is going to cost, you know, an exorbitant amount of money, and it's going to be very difficult, and it's a major undertaking that you can't do yourself as a government agency without necessarily IT expertise or support. I think that it makes that concept accessible to say, you know, we can do this and we can do it in an iterative way. We can do it in a way that prioritizes our needs versus our wants. And for all the governments, or, you know, whether it's local government or state government or even federal government that aren't necessarily into this world yet, or they're looking at making a jump into a cloud world, into a, you know, comprehensive platform sort of across their operations, this is one way to do it. And it's a way that it can be done, you know, under the budget constraints and iterative if need be. I think that the other part too is that we recognize that our customers need to come first as well. We're in that different, you know, we're further down the road here, and our citizens, our customers expect to be able to access information quickly and reliably on the internet and be able to log into something and make a payment or see whatever information they need to see. That's a standard expectation now, and we need to get on board and make that happen. And I think that that's another piece that is possible through our process or this whole process in general.
When we did it early on in our rollout, showing it to other members of the staff, and the word that comes out of their mouth is, wow, I've never seen that before. I've never been able to see this type of data or that particular data set before. Now I can see how that's going to affect how I'm doing my job. I can see how that's going to affect what information I'm able to give customers. And that's the word we heard all the time from the staff as we rolled out was, wow. And as they got used to it, and the wow kind of wore off a little bit, but it started becoming normal, they started taking ownership of this system. And that's the point where I was like, yes, finally. Ben and I are very dedicated to this, but we can't be the only ones dedicated to this. You have to have your whole user group kind of aligned with you. And when they started seeing the benefits and they started taking ownership of the system, they started saying, you know what, I can run this report that'll help you do your job and you do your job. And if I put data in this way, will that help you make a better decision? Those types of things. And not only that, we were able to develop a licensing package that we stack apps on top of apps on top of apps inside the system, and it doesn't cost us anymore on an annual basis. And so I think we were very fortunate to be able to put that kind of situation together. But what that's done for us is the more apps we put into the system, the cheaper the actual system gets on an annual basis. The more functionality we put into it, we're not doing that somewhere else. We're not paying another license fee somewhere else, but we're including it here for the same cost. And that allows, obviously, our funding mechanism and our funding requests to go smoother, but also it allows our staff to play in the system, to take ownership of it, get into the sandboxes and start playing with functionality. We've got several individuals now who have gotten into the sandbox and have developed their own applications, which was really rewarding to me. Ben and I built what we thought was a great system. They took it and did better things with it, put stuff on top of it that we never thought about, which leverages our capacity within the system, leverages our knowledge of it and our usability of it. But they get in there, they've developed applications, they run it through the group, and that wasn't a contractor telling us or developing that system. That was an internal employee. And now that employee wants to make sure that this system is successful. So they've got the same buy-off that Ben and I had from the beginning of, hey, I built something in there. Nobody's going to screw that up on my watch. And so it's all of a sudden pushing that same rock up the hill, a vision that Ben and I have been waiting to see. And we saw that very early on in the development of it.
And Claire, I'm not sure if you caught it, but I think Jason just, without knowing, gave you like a new marketing tagline, apps on apps on apps.
I like it. That'll be the title of this episode. Well, and for what it sounds like then, that really helps to encourage, obviously, not just productivity across the department, you know, all the benefits that we kind of talked about already, but it sounds like there's a people benefit in there as well, that it really encourages an environment of creativity, an environment of participation. Would you guys say that's a correct assumption on my part?
I think it absolutely is. And for me, it's one of the most surprising things to come to the realization of out of this is that we, throughout this project and throughout this build and over the years, we've seen this amazing, you know, return on investment that is a change in culture. And it has a couple of different components that kind of make you realize that Jason just kind of talked about, you know, ownership.
And here's our fifth and final ROI category, social or political ROI. When Ben talks about ownership, he's talking about the politics that shifted OSLI's social climate and strengthened the employee experience, which, as you may have heard in the last episode with Amtrak, tends to have a direct impact on the customer experience, on the mission overall.
Ownership is incredibly important for a couple different reasons. In government, people can go about their jobs and they can do a really good job, but they can get lost in the shuffle. Pushing, you know, the proverbial paper from one side of the desk to the other, it's sometimes hard to feel important or to understand how your work fits into the bigger picture. When we put this very transparent and very collaborative system in front of people, they can start to see the big picture for themselves, not just be told it from the top. And that's really incredible when people start seeing on a daily basis what their work is affecting and how it fits into the big picture. I think the second thing too is that when people come to that same realization on their own, that these things can make their jobs easier and make it easier for them to do better than they've ever done, that's incredibly powerful too. A morale booster, I don't know, that blows me away. Some of the things that I've seen when people make that realization that, hey, I can work, you know, smarter and easier and more efficiently by embracing this and taking ownership in it. And so having people see that for themselves and then really grasp it and change their jobs, frankly, take on more duties and more roles because their job just got easier. And then communication amongst employees. It's kind of crazy to think about, but when all of people's jobs come together and they start sort of working in each other's spaces or being involved in each other's spaces, it brings them together in other ways too. You know, we saw people talking more. We saw people getting up from their chair and walking over and talking to a program manager that maybe they never talked to before because they didn't know what necessarily that person did or had any interaction for them before. So we might be going out on a limb here, but I really think that we saw to a certain extent some of our employees or many of our employees start to kind of reflect these changes that we were putting into our platform. That's super cool.
I hope that a lot of folks get something out of our experience and don't be afraid to jump into it. I guess that's my take-home message.
Thank you for tuning into Our Digital Nation. To learn more about the trends and technology behind the discussion, visit us at salesforce.com/industries/government or follow us on Twitter at SalesforceGOV.